Israel would have us believe. The entirety of the Israeli state is built on the premise of a demographic equation that needs and necessitates a Jewish majority. That should make us all concerned and raise red flags for us and make us stop before we call it the only democracy in the Middle East and continue to fund it another year with $3.1 billion without any accountability.
What would stop the Israeli assault on Gaza, Joshua Hammond?
Ma'am, what would stop the Israeli assault on Gaza? A commitment for a long-term ceasefire. No more rocket fire. I'm talking about not the trickling in of more rockets and more missiles, but actually Hamas stopping the rocket fire. Let me remind you, ma'am, that the Palestinian Authority, who, by the way, controls areas A and B in the West Bank—
5 seconds.
And used to have control also in the Gaza Strip. They've just joined a unity government with Hamas.
We have to end it here.
This terrorist organization that's been firing rockets at Israel. So we call on them to end this unity for terror.
Joshua Hammond, senior advisor to Israel's ambassador to the United States, and Noura Arakat, a Palestinian human rights attorney, adjunct professor at Georgetown. I want to thank you for being with us. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Check our job openings at our website. Thanks so much for joining us.
This year's Concert of Colors Music Festival will be held at the Maxim Fisher Music Center on Woodward Avenue in Detroit the weekend of July 12th and 13th. Doors open at 1 p.m. The festival will feature live music from artists such as Third Coast Kings, HK and Les Saltimbanks, the Gabriel Brass Band, October Babies, Wayne Kramer and Melvin Davis' Rock and Soul Summit, Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars, Sheila Landis featuring Rick Maddow, and Taller Than They Appear with Mauger's Vaudeville Puppets, all broadcast live on WHFR from the Comerica Diversity Stage. Stop by our table. Meet your favorite DJs. That's the Concert of Colors, July 12th and 13th. See you there.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And we're live from Henry Ford Community College. And it's closed today because sort of a tradition and an efficiency thing over the last, I think, 5 or 6 years now for the spring and summer semesters. We are closed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for repairs and improvements on the campus. And today I noticed there's a large amount of concrete that was, I think, originally here back in the 60s, put here in the 60s, and it's kind of breaking up now. Now it's not safe to walk on, of course. So all kinds of repairs like that that really can't be done when school's in session, that's the reason we're closed. By the way, this is the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm, the station making waves, and also the host for this show. John Conroy, our news director, is off today. So here I am, and boy, when the boy's alone, the boy will play. Okay, about the closing though, one office at the campus is going to start being open 5 days a week though, starting this Monday, July 14th. Our Henry Ford College Welcome Center. Now they handle enrollment, admissions, financial aid for students coming to Henry Ford College. And we know it in the past, it has been a slight inconvenience. Some people, who knows, maybe they're busy Monday through Thursday and can't get here in person to get admitted or help with registration until Friday. Well, starting this Monday, July 4th, the Welcome Center will be open. Now, the Welcome Center, one reason we could do this is because it's a separate building. It's just on the north side of our main parking lot And so it's right here at the main campus, 5101 Evergreen. But when you get on the perimeter drive that drives around the college, the north drive, the first big building on your right is the Welcome Center building. And that's where you can conveniently park. It has its own parking lot, too. Or you can park in the main lot and just walk a few steps over to the Welcome Center. So anyone considering classes here, especially for the fall semester that starts August 28th, well, now's the time to get going and see people in the Welcome Center. So it will be open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on Fridays. Now, during the week, Monday through Thursdays, it does have hours that extend a little bit into the evenings. They go till 6:30 p.m. on Mondays and Thursdays. But on Friday, they will be here, and they will be open starting next week from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's Henry Ford College Welcome Center on the main campus of Henry Ford College, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road, here in sort of the center of Dearborn. By the way, August is only 3 weeks away. August 1st is 3 weeks from today, exactly. Today is, okay, I usually always say the date on the show, July 11th, 2014. And I put that in because some people are listening to this show later from our website. This show is always podcast. It's archived. It's embarrassing how many years we archive these shows. And there's nothing like old news, I'll tell you. But we're new news each week, which is why we're called the new WHFR Journal. So check it out online if you need to, if you're not available for the broadcast on Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m. So in 3 weeks, August 1st, what does that mean? Well, in the Welcome Center, they've decided to open on Saturdays too, okay? So they'll be open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. starting, I guess, August 2nd, the first Saturday in August. That's the story on the Welcome Center. Aren't you glad you asked? Okay, but we have a lot of stories to get in today, and hopefully I can even get a few opinions in, too, from other people, not necessarily myself. Remember, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. They don't tell us what to say. But we certainly appreciate their support for us as long as we're being pretty much open-minded and balanced, fair and balanced, just like Fox News says, which is not true for them, but we're trying to set a better example. Anyway, looking at the press and guide from last Sunday, we always go through the local papers from last week and hit the stories that maybe you didn't read. And if you don't subscribe, well, shame on you. Because if you got a paper, guess what? After you read it, you can give it to the person next door. You can pass it along. Several people could read the details about what's coming on here in the city. What a great community service that would be if everybody took their paper and gave it to the people next door. Well, one side or the other. And make a deal with them. Who's going to get it, I guess. Anyway, last Sunday, July the 6th, Dearborn Press and Guide, it does have a story that I think was actually out even before last Sunday, but our Dearborn Historical Museum is raising money to help improve its signage and profile. A lot of people driving down Michigan Avenue may not know that we have a historical museum, especially tourists, because it's just set back a little bit from Michigan Avenue, and there's nothing really on the corner. So one of the things they'd like to do is, several things. First of all, besides the sign on the corner there at Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn, they also want to get improvements to their museum website. They want to do a new one, in fact, and a blog, and they want to have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. I'm sure people want to Twitter about what used to be. I'm sure that's going to be a big one. Informative exhibits and events, a quarterly journal, email blasts. Okay. But the Raise the Sign fundraising campaign is primarily to let people know about the buildings and their histories. And, of course, the most well-known of these structures is the Commandant's Quarters. And that faces Michigan Avenue between Monroe Street and Oakwood Boulevard. Built in the 1830s, it's the oldest building in the city, still on its original location. It served as home to 19 commandants when the building and grounds were part of a United States arsenal. Yep, they kept military stuff there, cannons, whatever they fired out of cannons, okay, and gunpowder. Why did they have it here? They didn't want to blow up to Detroit. That's right. If it happened to accidentally go up, it wouldn't hurt Detroit. It would just demolish everything around here. Anyway, the arsenal closed in 1875, and the building was used for many purposes until it became Dearborn's first museum in 1950. Today, it's used to teach visitors what life was like during the mid-19th century and throughout the Civil War. And that's all, of course. Very, very good news. To find out how we used to live and why, and what we can learn from that. Do we make any mistakes? Do we do some so good that maybe we should go back and do some of the things we do now that same way? Might save energy. I'll guarantee it'll save energy. But nonetheless, the history of Dearborn and the surrounding area is very important. Yes, it is. Now, facing Michigan Avenue with the current signage on the building and on the lawn, this structure has fairly good prominence. Museum officials believe the McFadden-Ross House and the Gardner House could also use some help in the awareness category. Both provide visitors with stories of the area from different viewpoints. The McFadden-Ross House originally was the powder art magazine of the arsenal. That's the one that would really go boom. And when the government closed the arsenal and sold the buildings, a farmer, Nathaniel Ross, purchased it and converted it into a private dwelling. Quite attractive, too, by the way. It's at 915 Brady Street, just down from the Commandant's Quarters. It was later donated by the family for use as a museum, and it is used for exhibits, lectures, and events, and houses a historical archive on the second floor. Built in 1831, the Gardner House is the oldest structure still standing in the city. Originally located at present-day Warren Avenue and Southfield Roads, its residents, the Gardners, were well known for the English draft horses they raised. Henry Ford knew the Gardners well and stayed overnight at the house numerous times. He had this big house here, right? Maybe it was before he had a big house here. Anyway, they were friends. Today, the Gardner House is used to teach visitors about pioneer life in the Dearborn area and what it was like to live in a rural farmhouse. So those three things, and they especially want to make people more aware of the McFadden-Ross House and the Gardner House, as well as the museum in general. So, okay, a sign. A donor is offered to match up to $500 to design, build, and install a two-sided sign for the Dearborn Historical Museum that will be placed on the corner. Those willing to help are asked to visit, and it gets Brady and Michigan Avenue. If you're willing to help, you can visit their website, thedhm.com. There's a Raise the Sign campaign place that you can click there and donate to that. So their current website is thedhm.com. Again, DHM stands for Dearborn Historical Museum. Okay, so if you can help them, the deadline to raise money, I guess before that donor goes away with this $500, is July 18th. And if the $500 is met with the matching funds, the cost of the sign and installation will be covered. And all donations are tax deductible. Any money over the $500 mark will go into the museum's educational fund for future programming, including school field trips. Got to have people around and things organized, sometimes giveaways, as they're called, to the kids when they come by. So that's very needy cause. Not much money involved there, actually. I don't know what kind of sign $1,000 buys these days, but I guess it's all they need. Also, Henry Ford College, and they didn't tell me to say this, but they're offering a new community leadership degree. And what is that all about? Well, first of all, the program was developed, we didn't just think of it ourselves, it was in conjunction with Access, the Cody Rouge Community Action Alliance, the Corporation for a Skilled Workforce, the Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation, Marygrove College, a company called Southwest Solutions, and the University of Michigan Dearborn, and also Urban Neighborhood Initiatives. And again, these are all with capital letters, capital U, Urban, capital N, Neighborhood, capital I, Initiatives. So all these groups came together because they need trained people to help organize the community, to do the things that are most needed in the community. Why have outside people come in? Well, we can do it ourselves. But we need to know how to do it. How do you organize people? How do you get people to take action? Even for their own good, their own immediate good. Talk about self-interest, as we always say on the show, local is as local does. No, that's not what we usually say. Oh, that's probably true, too. Local, it's what matters most to you, or should, because it's right next door. And you can have the biggest impact on accomplishing the things that need to be changed. So career opportunities, specifically, you say, well, where can I get a job? Career opportunities include community development, economic development, and community organizing and policy advocacy. Okay? Through this degree program, students learn the skills and develop their talents to become agents of positive social change in various aspects of their careers and communities. The program is part of the community learning partnership between all those people I just mentioned. Students will receive an associate's degree, that's 2 years, in community leadership from HFC with a direct pathway into the community studies minor at U of M Dearborn. If that's a minor, it's a minor to what? Social studies? Business? It doesn't say here. Political science? Anyway, it's a community studies minor, and the classes will directly connect. You know, it's a transfer agreement so that, you know, you take credits over there. They just don't float around as credits, but they go directly towards requirements towards a four-year degree program. And also here at HFC, students will receive mentorship experiences from prominent community leaders. Is that better than internship? Mentorship, yeah, I think it is. From prominent community leaders, and you can think of a few, I know you can, and will gain practical hands-on experience through internships also and field experiences within the within community organizations, nonprofit groups, and government agencies in this area. Not just U of MD, it also offers a direct pathway, if you choose, into a political science major, a social science major, and a sociology minor at Mary Grove College in Detroit, in case you want to go up to Mary Grove College instead of U of MD. So we have a transfer program with them too. For additional details, of course, you can always go to the old Henry Ford College website, hfcc.edu. We don't know what combination of letters we can get in the future for the fact that we did drop the word community, but not the concept. Oh no. This program proves we care about this community. We want things to get done here. We want to train people to make that happen, along with all the other groups helping. And there are several people here at the college you could talk to. There's a Dr. Brenda Hildreth, who's the coordinator of student outreach and support, just mentioning these names. Imad Nouri, who is the associate dean of academic advising and counseling, the counseling department, in other words, or in political science here, and this is really part of political science. I'm sure there's some special classes they've designed for this. Anthony Perry, he's the political science instructor here that is responsible for a lot of the candidate forums that happen on this campus in our Mazzara Conference Center right next to the Liberal Arts Building and Student Center where WHFR is housed, broadcasting from right now. Oh, yeah. So, contact anyone over here. Again, just probably go to the HFCC website. The program is called Community Leadership Degree. That's new, starting this fall. We did a story last week about Dearborn's ranking, and first of all, we did two stories, I think. Tim Skupik, a reporter out of Lansing who has his own show on public television about what's happening in Lansing every week, On the Record it's called, very good. Check your local listings in for Channel 56, WTVS. Is that TVS? Well, anyway, you know, the public station, public TV station, Detroit. Whatever channel it is on your cable setup, okay? And the second study came from, I thought, a somewhat strange organization, but nonetheless, what are they doing ranking cities? But nonetheless, according to various criteria, we came in number 8 out of the top 10 cities to live in Michigan. So I do think that the organization doing it, they picked the criteria and they gave, you know, points, maybe equal points for how many restaurants you have, And so several readers wrote in, and saw this is also on the Press and Guide website. There's been a lot more people making comments about generally, it looks like most of the comments, 3-1, at least from the paper anyway, talk about how this rating is a joke. I mean, first of all, the first man said, Charles said, the city has no shopping or restaurant districts any longer. Almost every other building in downtown Dearborn is either empty, a hookah bar, yogurt, or cigar bar. Well, that's West Dearborn, mostly. The other stores are dollar stores, discount stores, or Goodwill. And that's a really nice Goodwill store, albeit kind of small in West Dearborn. But that's a pretty classy operation. And excuse me, Charles, but recycling clothes that are still good is a good idea, a good bargain, even for those, like maybe yourself, who only buy new clothes. There's a lot of value in, you know, clothes that are not tattered and torn and not dirty and completely wearable. It's a good place to shop. My daughter shops at a place similar to that. I won't give them a plug. I'm not sure they're a nonprofit, but there are several stores around town that give tremendously discounted prices on clothes that I would say are almost new. And she finds toys for her daughter there, and Goodwill too is the same sort of thing. They're an official nonprofit though, and good to support. So I don't see anything wrong with Goodwill. You think it's a negative thing to have a clothing store for poor people? It's really for everybody. It really is these days. He says the public schools are among the worst in the state. Well, it's not been proven, Charles. I know the administration of Dearborn Public Schools would dispute you on that one. I'm not sure what you're saying. Just because the high school, by one point, one of our three high schools is in sort of a special focus situation with the state of Michigan, and you know how I personally feel the state of Michigan is doing a very bad job supporting our local schools. And you just talk to our Board of Education, too. They're crazy. According to them, several people on the board have said something almost to that effect about our state legislature and rules and procedures and still not even funding us as well as we had 3 years ago. And, you know, plus the challenge from charter schools, which really don't have the accountability at all. Not too many in the Dearborn area, but elsewhere in Michigan. And they've been proven not to be effective, even worse off than the public schools so far. I think you've gone a little far there, Charles, with all due respect. You certainly welcome to your opinions. But I think the facts here that we've covered on this show don't support that we're among the worst in the state. He says a third of the community either cannot speak English or refuse to. We have a lot of immigrants, yes. Most of them are not recent immigrants, though. So their English ability is rapidly improving. And I think it's their right, their personal right, to speak any language they want to at home. It's true, English is the language of the United States, that you have to have a good working knowledge of English to have a good job and to be successful. But just because we have immigrants who value their native cultures, I think that's wonderful. You know, that's really wonderful. And if we understand what those things are, it's even better. And I learned in high school when I was kind of forced to take French, but later learned to love the study of a foreign language, that culture and language are really closely tied together. You can't really understand the culture until you understand the foreign language that goes with it, or the native language that goes with it, depending on where you look at. And you know, because the language expresses the ideas and the feelings in a unique way that is what gave birth to the culture. So I highly recommend every student in Dearborn, and I think it is now part of the new state high school requirements, every student must take a foreign language. And we're starting to teach Arabic here, where we have for quite a few years at Henry Ford College. That's really an appropriate idea, not for the people who already know how to speak it. Kind of redundant there, isn't it? I bet they get easy A's, although not necessarily. Maybe they didn't learn the academic, correct Arabic grammar. It's often true if you just pick it up conversationally that you won't know the written grammar that would make intelligent conversations in the Arabic language, for example. In any event, okay. And let's see, someone else said to rank just behind Ann Arbor is ridiculous. Dearborn shouldn't rank at all. A large portion of responsibility for the fall of Dearborn should fall on our mayor, or should I say the lack of mayor? Well, this is an EEA. That's their abbreviation, I guess. And, Mayor O'Reilly is very busy mayor. He is not, as they used to say many decades ago, lollygagging. He is going to meetings. He's making changes. Maybe you don't agree with them, but he's got an argument. He's got his reasons, and he believes it's for the better. And guess what? Our city council has gone along. Okay, except for one person. But nonetheless, the city council, vast majority support for the mayor's programs and direction. And he is giving us a direction. So lack of mayor? No, we don't have a lack of a mayor. No. He says the plethora of fast food, garbage, sushi restaurants galore, and shawarma joints account for the high restaurant quota. Number one, probably shawarma is better than a burger for you. I mean, it all depends how they make it, but okay. Most of the shawarma restaurants or Middle Eastern restaurants, more accurately, in Dearborn, have fantastic food, very fresh tasting. You can get vegetarian if you want to, or you can get meat of sorts. We have just excellent, excellent Middle Eastern restaurants in Dearborn, and it's great food. You may not like it. Have you tried it? Anyway, there's nothing wrong with the shawarma restaurant. Now, the fast food garbage, yes, we have fast food restaurants. We've got a couple of McDonald's, or at least one anyway, and one Wendy's on the east side. Not sure about west side. There was supposed to be a burger place at Michigan and Telegraph, and that didn't happen. Can't remember its name now, but that corner is still a great location, I would think, but no. That hasn't happened. No, I'm not in favor of fast food. But let me tell you, Ann Arbor has fast food restaurants all over the place, too, along with a lot of good ethnic restaurants. They don't have as many Middle Eastern restaurants, I don't think, as we do. But they've got a lot of fantastic Chinese. And what's wrong with sushi? Okay, I don't, personally, I think if you eat fish, it should be cooked first. All right. But there are healthy ways to prepare it. And to make sure it's healthy, you have to have a health license, you know, a healthy food preparation license from the state of Michigan. And they wouldn't let you, you know, if you don't like some raw fish, actually most food served at sushi restaurants is cooked. But yes, there are literally some sushi dishes where the fish is not cooked. But it's well prepared, healthily prepared. You don't like it, don't have to eat it. What's wrong with it? Nothing. Probably healthier than the so-called fast food that I personally agree with you on the garbage factor in terms of calories, in terms of amount of fat, in terms of amount of salt. Most fast food restaurants do not have healthy food, in my humble opinion. That's why I don't support them. But a lot of good choices here. But yeah, do we not have quality restaurants? We got a whole bunch of quality restaurants. Do I have to go down the list? He said it concludes, I'm sad it's come to this, but I doubt the city can turn around at this point. Another person said that we're going to become a M Rim Sojourner. That's what the letters say. Said that maybe Dearborn is becoming a future ghost town. Lived here more than 60 plus years. I've never seen it so dire. I won't even shop in West Dearborn. Empty stores you have to pay to park to see. Well, there's no general department store in West Dearborn. There used to be. And so general shopping, no. I think that is a problem with our business plan. We don't have stores that are general stores. There is a great Kroger's in West Dearborn. And of course, the farm markets, including, of course, every Friday, the farmers market that is sponsored by the chamber, the Dearborn Area Chamber in the Brady Library parking lot. That's fantastic. By the way, food truck rally tonight, folks, from 5 to 9 out there in the Brady parking lot after, of course, the market closes. But fantastic quality food. Okay, some of it's kind of like fast food burgers, but, you know, healthy, lean meat, if you like meat, Great desserts. It's a fun thing to do. So these are gourmet food trucks. And every Friday, pretty much, I know for the next couple weeks anyway, they take a week or two off in August. But nonetheless, food truck rally. Okay. And Brady Library parking lot tonight, every Friday, pretty much for the next couple weeks from 5 to 9 p.m. Now, one person in the paper did say Dearborn should be ranked ahead of Ann Arbor, which pretty much caters to the college crowd and not much else. Well, I went to college. What's wrong with the college crowd? Young people? I mean, there's a lot of good food restaurants that everybody can go to. They don't keep anybody out. You think some college kids are noisy? Maybe? I know some people who are 60 plus that are quite noisy and disrespectful. I'm not saying college kids are disrespectful. There's a real good high standard that's required for people to attend the University of Michigan Ann Arbor. And so maybe it gets a little crowded on football Saturdays or something out there on the streets because families come and people come from all over to attend the football game or the basketball games. Anyway, he says Dearborn has great places to dine, including one of the only two remaining beef carvers. Oh, beef carvers. I used to eat there years ago. I have a lot of personal friends that say they don't like that place anymore, but I haven't gone there recently. I keep trying to get people to go there, and I say, I'm not going there. I used to love beef carvers years and years ago. My parents and I always went there. Mongolian barbecue, I think this person means. And this is a person who identified themselves as die cuts. Die cuts. It's interesting, people, they leave these comments. Good for Charles, at least he left his first name. The other people, they don't want to give you their name. Oh, no, because then you know who they were. Like real people. Then you'd have to take responsibility for what you say if you used your real name. Oh, no, that's too risky. Anyway, he mentions Leon's. And that's okay. That's a good restaurant. Red Olive is good. He says big chains we've got, like the Olive Garden. Yeah, we've got quite a diversity. I agree with him. We do have the number one tourist attraction in the state, if that was part of the ratings, the Henry Ford, which includes Greenfield Village and the Tour of the Rouge plant and all those different things that go on. A little controversy there about how Dearborn should be ranked. Oh, it's halfway through the hour already. My goodness. Well, let's take a listen to a comment here from Jack Lessenberry, who is on Michigan Public Radio, and we thank them for allowing this to be listened to by anybody at any time. It's actually a podcast that you can get and download on your computer weekly. But here's one that I picked out, at least, and take a listen. This first one is, in this political season, or it should be in your mind, because August is a very important election. We're going to talk more about that after these comments here. First, he says people need to stop using political slogans as a substitute for critical thinking. And then his next comment is going to be about how Wayne County is so Democratic. The only election that really counts is the August primary. So let's take a listen to Jack Lessenberry here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The show is the new WHFR Journal.
I noticed something familiar yesterday after I talked about a new investigative series in the Detroit Free Press on charter schools. What I said drew a fair amount of comment, and virtually none of the comments had anything to do with anything I said. People mainly reacted based on opinions they already had about charter schools. Some of the comments weren't even about schools at all, at least not directly. One writer declared that our leaders want to pay executives a lot, screw over the workers, and choose not to believe in science and mathematics. I'm not clear exactly what that has to do with charter school administration. Another said that burglar alarm companies are really an outrage since our taxes pay for the police. Okay. Finally, somebody who plainly didn't read the charter school series said it was all dictated by the teachers' union and accused me of wanting more government insight into all phases of our lives. Now, these comments span the ideological spectrum, but they all have something in common. Something, that is, other than being essentially irrelevant. The writers were using slogans as a substitute for thinking. Somebody unintentionally gave me a big compliment a few weeks ago. She said she couldn't figure out whether I was a left-winger or a right-winger. I told her that I felt more like a large flightless bird. In fact, I don't think there's anything to be gained by giving ourselves labels and putting ourselves in little boxes. Instead, we would all do better to challenge our own assumptions. 10 years ago, I went to a party 3 days after George W. Bush was reelected. A stunned woman told me she'd never met anyone who'd voted for Bush, which meant she was as clueless in her own way as the climate change deniers she loved to ridicule. What I'd like to do today is challenge everyone listening to think about one of two issues. If you think of yourself as a conservative, consider a new report the think tank Michigan Future just released about our neighbor to the west. Minnesota has far higher tax rates than Michigan does. It has a state government that spends more and provides a better social safety net than Michigan does. Politically, Minnesota is very blue. Yet its economy is booming. Unemployment rates are far lower than ours. New jobs are being created and businesses moving there. Now, if you think of yourself as a liberal, ask yourself this. Did it really make sense for someone who was a clerk for the city of Detroit for 30 years to be able to retire on a full pension at age 52 and move to Florida? Does that make sense? Does it make sense to accept we have hundreds of thousands of physically healthy adults who can manage to not take part in the labor force? Nearly everyone agrees Michigan needs better roads, more and better jobs, and a better educated workforce. What if we just tried dropping our blinders and finding common sense ways to make those things happen? That may sound crazy, but hey, it just might be worth it. Wayne County has always been the biggest county in Michigan, at least in terms of people and the most important. Though it includes Detroit, more than a million of its residents live elsewhere, from the affluent leafy suburbs of Plymouth to gritty downriver towns like River Rouge. They're all very different, but have two things in common. First, they elect an executive, sort of a super mayor, to run things. And second, they live in a county in trouble and in deficit. In recent years, Wayne has been rocked by personnel scandals and an astonishing farce concerning a half-built new jail abandoned after $125 million taxpayer dollars had been wasted. Now there are increasing worries that Wayne, like its largest city, could be facing emergency management. That should be alarming to all of us for the same reason Detroit's troubles are. You can't have a healthy state when its largest city or county is dysfunctional. Detroit's collapse was probably unavoidable. Wayne County seems to stem mainly from atrocious management. That's what makes this year's race for county executive crucial, and that decision is not far away. Wayne is so Democratic that the only election that really counts is the August 5th primary. Incredibly, incumbent Robert Ficano is trying to retain his job, though polls show him dead last. Other candidates include Westland Mayor William Wild, County Commissioner Kevin McNamara, whose father Ed used to be the county boss, and former Commissioner Phil Cavanaugh, whose father was a Detroit mayor. But I spent some time yesterday with the man who's the heavy favorite, former Wayne County Sheriff and Detroit Police Chief Warren Evans, who spent most of his life in law enforcement. Evans, a lifelong Detroiter, is a dignified man who's proud of his record of lowering crime and balancing large budgets. To those who worry that his career has been about nothing but crime, he notes that he spent years mainly as a chief administrator of complex systems and at making them work. He's also a lawyer and, though few know it, operates a Western saddle horse business in South Carolina. He's had one brush with scandal. 4 years ago, he was fired as Detroit police chief for bad judgment because he was dating a subordinate and because of a disaster in which a little girl was killed by a police bullet in a raid being filmed by a TV reality show. Evans thinks he got a raw deal, but said, "When you're a leader and things go wrong, you fall on your sword." What he wants is to avoid the county falling further. He thinks the keys are decent management, better law enforcement, and increased cooperation with the county's 43 local governments. That includes, for example, saving money by having the county be a bulk purchaser for things everyone needs. He told me that if elected, he'd order an immediate forensic audit of the county and not rush to any decisions about the jail until the best plan could be figured out. Evans seems to have a grasp on the county's complexities and a plan for bringing them under control. If he wins, we need to hope he succeeds.
That was Jack Lessenberry. His opinions are stated in Metro Times. In fact, this week's Metro Times, in print, stated in print in the Metro Times, July 7th, his editorial is from this week, "Why Wayne County Matters." And it's pretty much what he just said in that Michigan Public Radio comment we last heard, that it's a very important election in August. And, you know, even if you're Republican, you might want to help us choose the best Democrat. I mean, Republicans have a couple of people running, I think, in the primary to be the Republican who might want to get elected to Wayne County Executive. But there are 11 names on the primary ballot, and as Jack Lessenberry has said, only four, he thinks, are anything like serious contenders. So, but it's interesting, because I didn't realize this, the polls show for Cano is at the bottom, and in this week's, in terms of favored to be voted for by people that might vote in the Democratic primary, and there's a lot of ifs there because we don't know about turnout on August 5th. If you haven't registered to vote, well, you can't vote on August 5th. If you've, again, once you register from a certain address, you're sort of registered for life. Okay. But in case you never registered to vote, it's too late now for the August primary. Still time to register for November, though. Well, that can't be all bad, right? And as I mentioned on this show, just because it was news, current mayor of Detroit, Mike Duggan, has recommended Warren Evans. So what do you think of that? He's former Detroit police chief who unfortunately had a little problem with that and had to leave after a year under Mayor Bing. And former Wayne County sheriff. Okay. And Lessenberry says he did talk in person with Warren Evans for about an hour or so a week ago. And need some beverage here. Throat is giving out. Anyway, he says in his article, this is sort of an addenda to what you just heard him speak, which was probably recorded a few days before he wrote this. Nearly half the electorate will be black in Wayne County. Warren Evans is both the only major African-American candidate and the best known. And he said, Lessenberry said he was frankly more impressed than he expected to be. Evans told me the first thing he wanted to do is order a forensic audit of everything in the county and stress transparency in everything. I wonder what a forensic audit is. Forensic. It's like forensic medicine. You do a detailed dissection, you know, physically of some dead body. Well, let's not say that Wayne County is dead. No, that would be a bad metaphor. Not quite. Not in bankruptcy anyway yet. Does the state plan also take over counties? You know, I know the state can come in and say, you're in bad shape financially. We're going to take you over. They can say that for school districts. They can say that for cities. They can say that for townships. Can they say that for counties? Well, Wayne County's not quite there yet, but if the state felt they wanted to say that, they could, and they could just take away all the voting power of all of us, and all the elected officials would have no power, and redo Wayne County the way they see fit. That might be a little too controversial, because there's a lot of cities in Wayne County, such as Dearborn, in addition to Detroit, and they wouldn't necessarily like the county all of a sudden cutting all of its services and laying people off and raising the price of this and that, according to the requirements of big business. Anyway, a little opinion there. Okay. Yep. Personal opinion. You have yours. I have mine. So, anyway, there was a pilot for a proposed TV show in which the chief, which is Warren Evans, would be the star. That's crazy, right? The other bizarre reality show incident was a botched police raid that ended in the accidental fatal shooting of a 7-year-old girl. Evans believed he got a raw deal, especially so far as his romantic life was concerned. On that, he seems to be right. Both parties were single, and their relationship was open, known to the mayor, and violated no department policies. We have a phone number coming in. Can't take the phone call because I'm doing a live radio show right now. Sorry. you can leave a message on our voicemail. By the way, if you want to make comments, pro or con of anything I say, or corrections, certainly, I'm always happy to do those, although it's usually the next week I have to do them. Our web address here at WHFR is whfr@hfcc.edu. Okay? So that's all pretty simple, right? So send an email to WHFR. You can mention in the subject line, you know, it's about the WHFR Journal. Or just say something for Jay, J-A-Y, that's me, and I will get it within a day or so. And certainly if I make factual errors, misrepresentations, I definitely want to straighten that out, of course. I think we do those better than anybody else does them on any other news service. I've never seen a correction in the Press and Guide. Isn't that amazing? I never see a correction in the Press and Guide or the Times Herald, which means they must always get all of their stories correct. Yeah, that can't be true. Anyway, so it's important to vote in August. Rick Haglin, back in June, said, of course, there's three tax questions in Wayne County here that we'll see. One is a state tax policy change. He says very, very important. I mean, August is the time. He said, well, it's just a primary. We'll have the real chance to vote in November. No, some of these things are going to be decided based on the August vote. Very important, therefore. And you know, I know nobody wants to pay more in tax. I want to pay more in tax. So don't say nobody. I want to pay more in tax, but I'd like it to go for the things that are really needed. I'm picky that way. All right. So if it's a good social purpose, yes, I'm living on a pension. Yes, I have a part-time job also, though, here at Henry Ford College. Okay, I'm getting by. Okay. But I do want to pay a small percent more for the things that I think are good for all of us and can't be funded any other way. In fact, I feel like Jack Lessenberry, his comment, he would call himself a large flightless bird. Is that a dodo, Jack? I hope not. That's sort of a nasty connotation. But in other words, he's not a liberal. He's not a conservative. He points out how Democrats and Republicans are both equally out of touch with reality most of the time. And he's trying to straighten things out. And that's what we're trying to do in this show, too. You know, I don't see myself as a Democrat or Republican, but there's a lot of things that are seemingly badly conceived, not well thought through in politics and our society, and I'd like to sort of help you, you know, get past it. Okay, so what about Rick Haglin from MLive.com, and what is he referring to? It's the whole idea that the end of the personal property tax, and I've mentioned it once or twice before in this show, but we'll summarize this and two other things on the August ballot, just 3 weeks from today, well, 3 weeks from next Tuesday is when this comes up. The first one is ending the personal property tax. Misnomer. It has nothing to do with individual people. It has to do with corporations, businesses. So it's a business property tax. But also, second misnomer, it's not their land property, the property that is the land under their feet, it is, or their buildings on that land, it's the stuff in the buildings. So it's like the mobile property. It's property you got, but you can move it around. It's like computers, it's like office furniture, it's like machines that make things. Okay, it's that's what they are referring to, is that businesses pay a tax, not just on their land, okay, but also on the stuff they got in the buildings. And the state, in their wisdom, decided to end it that way. And that way, a lot of small business people and big business people, from Ford Motor down to little winemakers, brewers, all sorts of businesses will become more competitive because they don't have to pay that tax. Yeah, okay. Well, it's been estimated that eliminating a tax would create 15,000 jobs and $450 million in additional business investment Yeah, sure. I mean, that so-called right-to-work principle that they passed, which is, again, a misnomer, but passed by our legislature, said, oh, this way in Michigan, everybody will want to come here with their businesses. Well, that hasn't showed up yet. We don't have a lot of businesses coming here. Oh, we simplified the business tax. We made it easier to compute, and we lowered it. Yeah, well, where's all the new business, okay, that's supposed to come here? I don't see it locally, and studies I've read statewide show the right-to-work law didn't have any major kickback to it, to us, any advantage, and I really doubt that the personal property tax will have any. But the problem is, see, the personal property tax money was, in the past, sent right back to the cities. That's right. The state would just sort of turn it around, maybe taking a small percentage, but they'd turn it around and send it back to the cities to help fund the city governments. That's all good purpose, right? So really, it was a local city tax on personal property, except a little money was kept by the state. And right now, cities, especially Dearborn and others, for years have said, you take it away, you better find a way to give it back to us. We need that money. We're depending on it. Otherwise, we have to raise taxes. We have to do things that people in these cities just can't afford to do or they don't want. So our government, yes, Democrats too, got together and came up with a plan on how to take use taxes, and there's a whole bunch of them in the state of Michigan, people that use things, and turn those around and dedicate those to reimbursing the cities for the money that they'd be losing. Okay? Now, there's no permanent, forever, make good, even if this law is passed, because, oh, our politicians can still jump in there and change it all around again in the future. But in order to approve this change, in order to get rid of the personal property tax and put this other system of funneling money from the use taxes to the cities, you have to say you agree to that. And at this point, everybody, small businesses, all kinds of groups, very bipartisan, says, yes, this is pretty good. There's a question about into the future if the politicians are going to keep dedicating the user fees to the cities to make up for this loss. But there you go. And obviously, we want to make our businesses competitive. I think there's other ways to go, such as the fair tax. We've talked about that on this show many times, the Michigan fair tax. Boy, that would eliminate all taxes on business. What, you say? What? All taxes, including the personal property tax? Yeah, it would eliminate all income taxes for everybody in Michigan. Michigan income tax would be gone. Okay, our sales tax would go up from 6 to 9.25, but we'd have no more income tax, no more business taxes. Oh my God. Would that make us competitive? Fantastically competitive. You say, well, what about the poor people that can't afford to pay taxes, higher sales tax on everything now? Because fair tax would charge you that extra 3% on the full 9.25% on everything, including the food you buy in the grocery stores, and everything that's sold would have a 9.25% sales tax on it. Okay, the fair tax actually does what they call a prebate, and that rebates, if approved, of course, fair tax has to be approved by whom? You've been listening? That's right, you, the voters. If it ever gets on the ballot, if the legislators ever want to go this way. Republicans, a lot of national Republicans love the idea of the fair tax. Democrats, I don't think we like it because the Republicans like it. But the fair tax is better than a flat tax. The fair tax does this prebate that every month, every family in Michigan working for a living will get a check in the mail that represents the sales tax typically paid by a family up to the end of the poverty level. So whether it's $50 or 50 a person for the family, depends on how big your family is, you will get that money every month. Plus, remember, all you workers out there, you won't be paying any withholding tax anymore for Michigan. That's right, because there won't be any income tax. You don't even have to worry about calculating or sending in a Michigan income tax form. How good is that? Well, won't take more time today, but there are other approaches, it's true, but our legislature, they very rarely come together in a bipartisan way, you know, much less nationally. And this is something they think will probably be good for business and probably won't hurt the cities long term. And it won't cost us any more money. Yeah, of course, what about losing those use taxes? Where were they going in the state of Michigan before rededication? So do I think this is the best idea? No, I don't think this is. But is it the best idea right now? Absolutely, positively. It's going to be on the ballot in August. You should decide how you're going to vote on that one. Okay, so it talks about the elimination or the end of the personal property tax. Again, it's not about individual people. It's not about land type property. It's about the stuff in the businesses, buildings, in the buildings of business, that gets a tax right now. And as far as I know, everybody, status quo people, would like to see this pass. Gary Warrenchuk, back in June, sent an email. If you want to be on his email things, just call his office, Gary Warrenchuk, Wayne County Commission. He's actually, of course, the head of the commission. He's not the head of the county, but the head of the commission. And he indicates that there'll be three proposals on the August 5th ballot. So one is a smart bus millage increase. Okay. He says you currently pay 0.59 of a mil for the Suburban Mobile Authority for Regional Transportation. That millage is expiring, and SMART is asking voters to approve a higher rate of 1.00 mil for 4 years. Now, 1 mil is a dollar of tax for property's taxable value, which is roughly half its actual value. It's not as confusing as it sounds, he says. In basic terms, if your house is worth $120,000, if it will sell for that, its taxable value is $60,000, so 1 mil will cost you $60 in property tax. And this is technically a county tax, but it will be voted on in Oakland, Macomb, and Wayne counties. Interesting. That's very important to decide on. Yours truly, I can express my opinion on these things. I can't tell you how to vote, and I'm not. But I think a lot of people depend on the smart buses. And we need, because the regional bus transportation authority is not in place yet, if ever. You know, they ordered more buses. Supposedly, President Obama found money and at the federal level for more buses for Detroit. But as I pointed out, I think on last week's show, we still got to get more drivers. We got to pay them a decent salary. We have to maintain the buses. We have to store the buses somewhere. Oh, my gosh. So it's going to be a while. And until then, the smart bus answer is not a bad one to help people get places in our community, especially if they can't afford a car. And they shouldn't have to have a car. What? Think about it. You know, operating a car, paying for a car costs a ton of money. If the bus system were decent, if Metro Transit were decent, like it is in many other cities, you wouldn't need a car. Imagine. The buses would be frequent, clean, safe, run almost everywhere over the Tri-County area. Oh, my God. So smart bus temporarily, I personally think you ought to consider it. Voting yes, but it's up to you. I'm not saying you should do that. New tax on public schools. School districts generally can't ask voters for additional property tax. There's rules against that in the so-called Proposal A. But the county's regional public school entity, Wayne County Regional Educational Service Agency, nicknamed RESA, R-E-S-A, is asking voters to approve 2 mils in property tax for 6 years and would pass along the tax revenue to local districts based on student population. Well, I'll tell you, it says here, Dearborn Public Schools took no position. I think that's wrong because I believe they really would like this to happen, but maybe the board didn't take a position on it. Isn't that amazing? Dearborn is one of the few districts that's allowed a voter-approved extra millage under Proposal A because it was a wealthier district and would have been hurt by Proposal A. That millage, so-called hold harmless millage, I call it a grandfather clause, is up for renewal in November, though. So Still, if it does pass, Dearborn would get a little extra more money. And as we know, and it's debated, the governor's race, it's going to debate it even more. But the schools are not funded as well as they were before Engler took office. Okay. He cut a ton of money from the school budget. It's been increasing back a little bit each year. He says he gave us more money this year than last year. But in the classroom, there's less. What do you mean in the classroom? Yes, he put more money into the teachers' retirement pension fund. But guess what? He had to do that legally. It was required by law. Yeah, he had to do that. So I think that's a no-brainer, although certainly Governor Engler and the legislature have gone against Michigan state law and the Constitution in several ways, having to do with funding. I won't go into that now. It's only 2 minutes before Highway 61 is starting here. Best in the Blues from 2 to 4, 2 to 6. Yes, 2 to 6 o'clock, 4 big hours every Friday with Joanne Korczynska. And she's in the house now. She is here at the station getting ready for her show. So I can't continue too much here. But, and of course, the third issue. So for the smart bus, the Wayne County RISA tax. So smart, they're asking for more money there. Not much, but more. They're asking for 2 mils for Wayne County Regional, which will help our local schools and our students to try to make up for the money that the state didn't give them. And don't we want our schools to be good? Yes. Okay. Change in state use tax distribution. That's the personal, ending the personal property tax, so-called, that I already identified in some detail for you. So there we go. Those are the three proposals. August 5th, 3 weeks from Tuesday. If you can't be there, by all means, get an absentee ballot. Okay? And I would think, since we're less than a month away, you can do that. Go to your city clerk's office. And you can even fill it out right there if you know how you're going to vote. Yeah, you can do it there on the same day if you make a trip in. Or you can call them. They will send you a request form. You can send back for the request. You can get the ballot in the mail. You can send that back or drop it off. So if you're not going to be around on Tuesday, August 5th, this is an important thing to vote for. One way or the other, however you want to vote. But it's important to let people know. Usually less than one person in five vote in a primary. This is democracy? No, not very good job there. So by all means, pull yourself together. Make some decisions. You can get sample ballots, I believe, and from your city clerk's office. You can get more information from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. Just put League of Women Voters into your Google search for Dearborn or Dearborn Heights, and you'll get the organization, and you'll be able to read what they have to say about the ballot proposals and the people running for these offices. They usually have questionnaires that they have these people fill out. And so it's a good way to get more information besides